Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And you're back in the room. This is the big interview. Imagine you are a player or a coach, and it's 24 hours to your first ever Champions League final. What do you think about? What do you do? What's the level of tension like? How do you excel? How do you ensure that tension doesn't get the better of you? How do you soak up the memories and take them away with you, win, lose, or draw, for life? Paul Clement here today. First published on the morning of the Champions League final at the San Siro. He's going to break down exactly what that was like for him and Carlo Ancelotti in 2014, when eventually, dramatically, they defeated Atletico Madrid in the first ever City derby in a European Cup final. Just wait for his explanation of what it felt like looking down the tunnel before the match, Cristiano Ronaldo's ability to make him smile and reassure him, the tension in the last seconds of the game when Atleti are leading 1-0, the Iker Casillas mistake, the celebrations, champion of Europe. Paul Clement here will take you right into the electric tension of the minute by minute, day before, day of, and day after Champions League final, right up to dancing around the Cibeles fountain in Madrid. Oops, look, I've given away who wins in the end. Enjoy.
You know, the final is against a brutal rival who you'd had games against during the season. What I'd really like to know, rather than talking about the game, is I'll bet you that many people listening have either spent several hundred quid on finding a ticket somehow to go to a Champions League final, whether their team's involved or not, flown somewhere, fought against crook hotel owners to get a bed at €350 a night in a European city, and they passed a day worrying about, will my ticket be there, or is it dry, will we be able to get a drink, will we get in, will it be fun, will it be rubbish? What is going to a Champions League final like? What was it like then? Arriving the night before, arriving in Lisbon, can you break that process down up to kickoff, as far as you can remember it?
Yeah, almost certain I'm right in saying that we went two nights ahead for this game. So we trained at Valdebebas 2 days before the game, and then we headed out to Lisbon. Normally we would always be there just the day before, training the stadium, and then, but we went that night. So we got there 2 days before, in the evening, dinner, beds. Next morning it was up, so now we're the day before the game. Myself, Carlo, Zizou, we reviewed some video of Atletico. We start to build about what we're going to do with our final presentation stuff with the players, and then we do a final session that evening in the stadium. That session didn't involve any tactical work. You know, that work's done at Valdebebas. It's not something that we were going to do.
No last chances, just to underline a couple of points.
No, it's not something we were going to do in the stadium.
So what are they doing? Just getting used to the atmosphere, or
yeah, getting the feel of the stadium, and that's really what it was whenever we played in the Champions League in the away stadiums. I know this was a neutral stadium, but you always have to be aware that if you're working in a neutral stadium or an away stadium, that you're going to be looked at.
There are prying eyes.
Yeah, it's not
matters.
It's not secure. It can do. You know, if there's certain players that not sure whether they're going to make it. I don't know if you remember that final. There were a number of players that had some doubts over them. Gareth had just come through an injury. Cristiano and Karim were always going to play, but were not 100%. But Pepe was the big question mark, whether he was going to make it or not. And he didn't, but the others did. So, you know, they're not the things that you want to see. And from their point of view, there was a big question mark about whether Diego Costa was going to play.
Oh, shit.
You know, he damaged his hamstring the week
off twice
before.
Because in the Barcelona quarter-final, he limps off.
Yeah.
And then comes back the week before in a league game?
Yeah.
I think. Soft, clearly not
yeah.
ready.
So everything was saying that he wasn't going to play. You know, our doctors were saying, if he's got this injury, he can't play.
Yeah.
But then we found out, not by seeing, because we weren't able to see, but that he had trained. Just as we were arriving at the stadium to train, they were coming off. We knew he'd trained, but we didn't know what he'd done. So we did predict that he would start, but we didn't know exactly what sort of condition he was in. So a light training session, we normally did the rondos and, you know, with a small game, a little bit of finishing at the end, and then back to the hotel. Bed, the day of the game is where we started to, you know, really finalise the prep. Players pretty much knew what the team was. Although it hadn't absolutely been confirmed, the work that Carlo had done in the week pretty much showed them.
What the Pepe decision in that case, every injury will mean that you might decide that 2 days before, or the day before, or 2 hours before, about whether a player plays or not. When was the Pepe decision taken, and what's that based upon in that instance?
Yeah, Pep was given, you know, as much opportunity as he could, really, to show that whether he was fit or not. So he did train going into the last game, but, you know, discussions between him, the doctor and the coach, you know, it was going to be too much of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
So he went onto the bench and Varane was going to start the game. Varane knew that as well. Varane knew that he was he had a good chance of playing leading into that because of Pep's problem. But it was made, you know, quite late, that decision. So day before the game.
Can you, on a Champions League final, particularly in Lisbon when both Madrid teams have got there, this, let's go for a 20-minute walk in the morning, which Spanish teams love doing. And I've seen the World Cup winning Spain side mooching about, you know, in their tracksuits, wandering around a park or queuing up outside the zoo. Did you risk that? Can you risk that? What's it worth?
We couldn't do that with Madrid, and particularly for that game as well.
Because the Atleti fans or...
Yeah, both. It was
security?
Security. It was... If you have Cristiano in your team, you know, to go on a walk on the streets with Cristiano is virtually impossible. We had a facility within the hotel where they were able to do some light exercises on the day of the game. That was on the morning. And then we went into a series of meetings. Carlo, with the help of some of the team behind the scenes, had put together a lovely motivational video that included messages from mums, dads, wives, children, which brought a few tears to the players' eyes, along with, you know, our path to the final with some, you know, really uplifting music. And then there was obviously the details of Atletico and also how we would play as well, which included my most, how could I say, planned, thought out and nerve-wracking talk I've ever given, considering the fact that Atletico was so strong as well in set plays.
Well, let's try to put a number on it. I guess that season they probably scored 20 plus goals in set plays.
Yeah, I mean, over the 2 years, I think they were hovering around between 60 and 64% of their goals came from set plays, which was European leading figure for a team that's right at the, you know, top of the division or in the Champions League final. So it was a standout figure. We knew we had to get that part right. So the presentation, which was the longest that I'd given, I think, all season, in a second language for a Champions League final, was, it was, what can I say, stressful, to say the least.
Can I ask the human thing? Because your Spanish is quite good, but it is stressful. Everything's got to be right, because you don't want to look at the pitch. That's not what... So do you stomp around your hotel room kind of saying it?
Absolutely. A lot of practice. And one of the analysts, Santi Fernandez, who's still at the club now, he spoke good English, so between the two of us, in the days leading into it, we had chosen exactly the graphical images to really deliver that message very clearly. And I practiced and practiced and practiced in front of him, you know, as Spanish speaker, his first language. He was really able to help me get the exact words, if you like.
Principally about defending set plays?
Both how we need to defend and how we need to attack.
Mm.
And if the final is a set play for them, so you can imagine at that point I'm thinking, oh no, please do not lose the Champions League final to a set play. And then a set play ultimately gets us in a position to win the final.
Where are your thoughts as you're in the bus going to it? Because players have often talked to me, players in Spain are good, they'll share. And sometimes they speak in a way that we're not taught to in Britain. They'll really be quite frank about their emotions or their thoughts, and often they'll be thinking about their what the video showed, their wives, their mums, their dads, their kids. As you get on the bus, is the bus noisy? Is it deadly quiet? What are you thinking about?
Yeah.
Does it matter who sits where?
For me, there was almost a certain sense of relief at that point, because I delivered, from my point of view, what was going to be a really important part of my job. So sitting on the bus at that point, it was like, well, I've done that now, and you know, a lot of the responsibility is now on the players. The players had a certain set of music that was played regularly throughout the season, so the CD went on. It was also about enjoying the experience of taking the journey.
That's what I was asking about.
Because yeah. On the streets, I mean, it was fantastic and very unique that basically almost the whole of Madrid had, you know, camped themselves in Lisbon for the day. So the mixture of the white shirts with the red and white of Atletico mixing together, the fan zone, and then the approach to the stadium was really quite special.
And getting to the stadium, one of the great things has been like turning that music off. Okay, players' music is usually crap. Was there anything that was any good in that?
No, to be fair, it was quite.
Any Stone Roses?
Nice
any
ones.
Weller?
No. There's some good tunes.
Yeah. I'll take that on trust.
Some Latin music, some of the Spanish songs. The songs were quite.
Did you have one
good
on there? No,
there was none of mine. Carlo always tried to get his playlist on, but
what would he have put on?
Oh, God.
Sinatra.
He had like love songs.
I've been singing a lot.
You can't play these, Carlo.
What, Reunited, Peaches and Herb, or what? That kind of lovey-dovey stuff.
Like, he'd have Lionel Richie on the job. You can't play that.
Hello.
So that was good. Went out and did the warm-up myself and Zizou with a fitness coach.
See, the responsibility is back on you again there, because people don't think about that. They think it's a routine, but players break down. Players miss games in warm-ups. And as commentators, you're like, well, he was out there, now he's not. And it's still about calibrating and getting that just right, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, by that point, it was the 60th game of the season. Players knew exactly. We never changed the warm-up once during the whole season. They knew exactly what to do. They knew to prep. Back into the dressing room, and there was recently, I saw it about a year after the final, actually. They showed a fly on the wall documentary of what it was like building up to that, and there was the camera in the dressing room, and that was nice to see, you know, what it was like. You could see the people.
Were you aware of it at the time? I knew it, but I was totally unaware of it at the time.
Yeah. But then when I saw it back, it was like you could see the anxiety in the dressing room and people wishing each other all the best. And then I have a really memorable moment about when we went out into the tunnel. The tunnel at Lisbon is quite short, so you pretty much only had enough space for the 2 1-11s to line up, and then there's the wall. But there was just enough space for me to be like the 12th man right at the end of the line, because I wanted to see out onto the field what was happening. And it was the end of the ceremony, and you could see the act going on the pitch, all the colours. You could just about work out that the Real fans were to this side. You could see the white, and then just there through the doorway, the red and white of Atletico, and then the trophy was sitting on the podium. And it was a real, like, hair on the back of your moment situation I was in. And I was standing right behind Cristiano, and without even realising it, it kind of took my breath.
Yeah.
And I went like that, and he just turned and looked over his shoulder and went, "Paul, don't worry." Like that. And I thought, really, I'm not even playing. I'm not even playing. And he's telling me not to worry.
He's hereby got my Ballon d'Or vote next season. That is class,
man.
That is wonderful.
It's a great moment. I'll never forget that.
I often, when I talk about, I don't know him, but when you interview him or listen to him, he's actually really witty, intelligent, admirable in just about every way. And he gets a terrible press because he's demonstrative and he cares, and he's got the pin, he'll show it. I love that.
Mm.
So did you take his advice?
I tried, but after they scored and went ahead, it was difficult then.
Listen, let's let old poor old Iker off the hook here. It could happen to anybody, right? Although that wasn't what you'd have been thinking on the night. He'd had a difficult season because he'd been dropped under Jose Mourinho. You came in, and between you and maybe Zizou or not, Carlo and Vicky, the goalkeeping coach, you crafted a solution where this legendary player would play the cups only, not play the league. Diego Lopez would play the league. And again, not enforcing my perception, punch me and shout me you're wrong if I'm wrong, but he did a good Champions League up to that point. Iker had saved you on a couple of occasions and played like Iker Casillas, at least in that competition, right?
Yeah, we had two really good goalkeepers. There was no denying when we arrived that Diego Lopez was in good form. Iker had been struggling for a number of reasons, mainly due to confidence and what happened with the last manager. And Carlo managed the situation by sharing the games between the two cup competitions and league for Diego. And both goalkeepers performed very well. And I know certainly within the supporters, the verdict was split about who is the better goalkeeper and who should play.
And within the dressing room. I wouldn't ask you to say that, but I'll name a favourite player of yours, Álvaro Arbeloa, was quite clear.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's opinion is worthwhile and vital if they're involved. And I've declared to you before the tape, and I'll do it now on the tape, that I'm a bit of an Iker supporter, a bit of an Iker fan. But I genuinely, without defending him, I think in the Champions League, he'd found exactly what you said he'd lost. He can start the season not looking the sharpest. He's maybe not always the world's most intense trainer.
Mm.
But as the competition grew, he played well. And then he made a complete arse up for the Atleti goal.
Yeah, it was uncharacteristic of him. He got caught in no man's land dealing with a second ball. You know, the ball got played in, it came out again.
Which they would have featured in your analysis because they weren't just good at first ball set plays. And they were, we talked recently to Michael O'Neill in Northern Ireland, and he picked up one day somebody said, like, when Atleti are attacking a set play, it's the first guy, the second guy, the third guy, everybody's alert, and they're talking rugby about phases of play. They were scoring goals from set plays off second, third, fourth phase play.
Yeah, yeah.
So they must have been warned about that.
No, absolutely. We knew that they were strong in the second phase. It was an error. Everyone knew he made an error. He knew it himself. You could see it in him. There was nothing that could be done at that point. You know, you just had to get on with it. And coming in at half-time, Carlo was brilliant with the players. And he was calm with them. He'd spoken a lot before about, you know, there's another 45 minutes to get back into this game. It's not about panicking. Keep doing your things. Because we played okay.
Yeah, no question.
Hadn't had any really big chances. The big chances, I think, came in the second half. Carlo's substitutions that he made were positive. One was more of a forced one in Khedira. You know, Khedira was the decision to who to play in midfield was between Khedira and Iomendi. With Alonso being suspended, they were really the two choices. It wasn't easy to pick Khedira because he'd been out for so long with the ACL and had only actually played one game before the Champions League. But we knew he'd done a really thorough rehabilitation from the knee. He was so professional. He had that experience. So he went with Khedira over Iomendi. But it was going to be difficult for him to last the full duration. So that was one change that needed to be done. And the other one...
The other one's magical. And I think it's testimony to the coaching team.
Well, actually, in the first year of us being there, that if you're talking about Marcelo and Contrao, Contrao was the better left back in the first year.
It's incredible to hear that said.
And in the second year, it was clearly Marcelo.
By a distance. Mm.
So, you know, I think Contrao deserved to play the game based on what he'd done that season.
He'd made the cross for the semi-final first leg winning goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Overlapping.
Yes.
Looking like he'd looked when he burst through in Portugal and for the national team, which was somebody who could defend and attack and was a blend of the traditional and the modern in terms of, and then he wasn't. And I'll say, I'm not in for, it would have been said around Madrid regularly that he wasn't the smartest, the most assiduous. I don't think he moved with the times in terms of where you took the club.
Yeah,
yet,
sure.
He started that game.
Yeah.
And he didn't piss Marcelo off, who came on and did quite well.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. I see site for details.
Yeah, obviously, Masala was sad not to start the game, and he was disappointed before the game. But you know, he was ready to contribute, and it was the right time. You know, Fabio hadn't had a particularly outstanding game; it was the right substitute to do. And then, Morata was
Morata, that's the. How did you keep him alive all season, like focused and intense, and ready to take that chance?
Well, a lot of that goes down to him. You know, He was a competitor, he liked to train. And I think also Arbeloa has a lot to, can take a lot of credit for the way that he was and the environment he created with those that weren't playing so regularly. Because there were a number of occasions through the season, and if you say Cavajal played more games at right back than Arbeloa did, and in the second year even more so, and I see this year now he hardly features at all, so his football's got less and less over the years. But even in that first year, Cavajal would play more than Arbeloa, so Arbeloa was having to train more and play less. And there were a number of times when Carlo said, right, we've had a heavy schedule, tomorrow is going to be a day off, but those that have not played tonight, so it was a day after a game, those that have not played tonight, if you want to come in and work, you can come in and work, and we'll do some training with you. The coaches will be there. And this might have happened 6 to 8 times over the 2 years. And almost always, Morata was in that group. Mm-hmm. Arbeloa, lots of times in the first year, with Nacho and Casemiro, etc. Every time they were given the opportunity to either be off or come in, they came in. They never once said, we're going to take the day off. And I think big credit goes to Arbeloa, because he would say, I'm in, and right, you're in, aren't you? You're in.
That's beautiful.
We got 6, we got 8. Then he'd come to me and say, right, what about we do this in training? He was already thinking about what he wanted to do in the session. I mean, he was a fitness fanatic. I've never seen anyone so driven by getting fit and training. I mean, during the first pre-season, we had a weekend off. And come back after the weekend, I said, oh, yeah, nice weekend. We'd just done 6 days training, which included 3 doubles in that as well, so 10 sessions. And I said, you have a good weekend off? And no, I did a triathlon. And he would do these other crazy physical tests. I mean, he just loved to work. So he was very influential around the young players.
You made me very happy, because it's fantastic that you can attribute something special to a player who didn't play that much. Mm. And we all are learning that the fabric of a group beyond players 1 to 13 or 14 is really important. Who pushes the other ones in training, who's competing for his place, and therefore whoever's got the place has to work hard, because in airs by right. And I remember during the 2012 European Championship, where Alvaro was still involved and we were doing interviews, and we get privileged access to the group, and he stopped me and wanted to know all about what I was doing, as in the mechanics of journalism. Why did you do this, and when did you do this, and how would you use that, and do you ever find that? And I was like, whoa, I like this, I like curiosity in life, and he's likable and intelligent to listen to, and yet he's in, at the moment, in this very public, very intense spat with Gerard Piqué, where Alvaro almost represents Madridismo and Piqué almost represents it. They're very different people and they don't get on, and it's getting kind of nasty. Aberoyne, Iker fell out fairly badly. So for you, people, it's not a visual medium, so when Paul was talking about Aberoyne, that you were showing that he was getting the other ones involved just by that little gesture of leadership, like, you know, Casemiro, are you in right? As in, I'm not saying you've got me here, but as soon as I put my arm around your gesture to you, you're in. And that does some of your coaching work for you.
Yeah, of course. And as a coach and a manager, that group that aren't playing as much, the management of them is everything, because they need to be there to create good training intensity for those that are playing. They need to be ready to be called upon to take their opportunity, because it can happen at any time. You know, long-term injury and they're in. You know, he certainly made that a lot easier and a lot more professional than it could have been.
I've been at a couple of European Cup finals that have finished in unbelievably dramatic fashion. At 99, with United in Munich, with a club that is pretty strong in your heart, because the Chelsea game was just about as unbelievable with Didier Drogba's goal and what happened subsequently. There's been Liverpool, blah, 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 blah. So where was your mind and your heart and your nerves with about a minute and a half left in Lisbon and you're trailing 1-0 to the enemy?
Well, I thought, you know, time was running out and, you know, we'd had a couple of chances, a couple of half chances, and thinking, are you going to get another one? Are you going to get another one? And you're looking up at the clock. My understanding, I don't know if this is true or not, but someone said to me that the Atletico kit man had brought the box out, which I think had the T-shirts in and the caps probably. So, you know, it was getting to that time. People were, you know, some had started to leave the stadium. You know, it was getting to that point, 93. Five additional minutes. I know Simeone was crazy about there being so many, which, you know, I thought it was fair. I did think it was fair with the stoppages and the time wasting, you know, for the set plays and the throw-ins. I thought it was a fair five. And obviously, after we did score, and Simeone was remonstrating with the referee that was going into it, that he played five, but, you know, we did score after three. So nearly all games have three added on. So I don't think it was an argument that we'd scored on 94, 95, 96. It was 93. But, yeah, obviously, clearly that's late. That's a late...
The fat lady is warbling and warming up her voice to sing.
Yeah.
Can you remember the goal?
Yeah, what I can't remember is how the corner came about. I can't remember that. But I remember clearly, like, Luca's right-footed out-swinging corner and then the ball being quite high and then dipping down. And Sergio not actually being up that high himself in terms of the jump, but the connection was outstanding. And at that period of the game, so I mean, it was right in the bottom corner. You're talking about against Courtois, 6'5", 6'6". He's got a massive reach. Anything but where it was, and he probably saves it, or it's going to go wide. So, a sensational moment. And I was off. I get there a bit late. I think the huddle had almost broke up, and they were heading back to the kickoff by the time I got down there, but you do see me just arrive at the end, and by the time I got there, it was like, come on, get back out there and let's finish this off.
Were you slow getting there because Xabi Alonso pushed you out of the way? Because
Xabi was down there as well.
He's up and off in his suit, isn't he? The goal goes in, and he's up over the wall and on the track, moving faster than him. He's moved all night.
Well, I think I'm right in saying he got another ban for that.
Probably.
That ban, he got banned.
Doing occasional
for doing
work
that.
For UEFA.com. I can't comment on that.
No.
So, all right, let's leave his foul misdemeanour of running around in joy at a football match aside. Can I ask you to be frank and say, as soon as it was 1-1, did you kind of know you were going to win? Because I think everybody else did.
Yeah, we had a really positive feeling at that point. There were two things. You looked at the Atletico players from the psychological point of view about conceding a goal at that point, that's hard to take. But also physically, towards the end of the 90 minutes and then going into extra time, there were players really fatigued. You know, they were dropping with cramp. They had to do the Diego Costa change after 8 to 10 minutes, so that was one change. Two others, you know, it was difficult for them to see the game out physically. I did have some concerns whether we would be able to, because we did have doubts over Cristiano's fitness, Bale's fitness. Di Maria at one point was down and was thought he'd actually torn his hamstring, but it had just tightened up, and I think the euphoria and the adrenaline just got them through it.
There's no fitness like we're going to win, because they all looked as if it was day three of the season.
Yeah.
Once the equaliser goes in, yeah. I mean, they were playing glorious football. It was like playing as if it was October. It was absolutely fantastic. And I was like, I don't know Gareth at all, but I was hugely pleased. That to me, irrespective of what happened later, is the winning goal. As soon as it's 2-1, that is it.
Yeah.
And I was pleased by him because he'd been, you know, underappreciated both by the Madrid crowd, I think, in that first season, by the Madrid media. And I think in Britain, if another player, a different type of player or in a different era, had been going abroad and winning the Champions League, he'd have been lauded for it differently. So was there satisfaction for you in seeing him getting that goal?
Yeah, of course. And after having got the winner in the Copa del Rey as well with a legendary goal.
Running down the left, not the right. Where
down the left.
Having been defending outside his own box, which nobody gives him credit for either.
Deep, 4 metres off the pitch.
I think he went out and got an ice cream and then came back. And it was about 44 metres.
It's an incredible goal. It'll go down in the... as a legendary goal as well as the winner in the
Speaking
cup.
As a Scotland, and I don't be rude now, but like, we know each other well enough for me to talk about David Neary in the World Cup of 1982 when Jimmy Hill called up Topo when Davy scored the best goal in the world ever from 40 yards. It was a good goal, but Gary Topo poked it in.
No, he did.
He scuffed it.
I'm not sure he did. I mean, you see players do that now.
Oh, it's a trick shot, is it?
Ronaldinho, what about the way he gets that quick release off the toes?
True.
I think it's a skill. Marcelo can do it really well as well.
Okay, well, I'm not really in a position to argue that one, but let's say I didn't come into this discussion with that point of view. But that was a glorious goal. I don't know if you've ever seen it, and if not, I'll do what Mark, I did for you today and bring you a nice picture. It's a glorious picture taken in reverse angle by a sports photographer at the Mestalla, where you win the cup.
Mestalla,
isn't it?
Yes.
So it's taken from the end at which Pinto is defending and which Gareth's about to score. Mm. And there's like, Gareth has gone wide, Bart was looking at the camera going, oh, how did he get by me there? And that time Martino's going to everybody, get back to people who are 30 yards behind you, are never going to get there. And there's this beautiful tableau of Gareth, like a winged god. Yeah. I mean, it's Chariots of Fire. Bart are going, really screwed this up. Tata panicking. And it's just all frozen and still. It's a fantastic photo. Fantastic photo,
yeah.
Which if you don't have, you should have, and if Gareth doesn't have, he should have.
It was a great moment,
and poor old Tata should never have to see it life. The celebrations in Lisbon. What's winning a Champions League like?
It's incredible, and the fact that it's also it's a famous one as well. The 10th, Arbeloa said it to me the next day as we were going to the town hall to meet the mayor. He said, "We've just won the most important trophy in world football," and I never thought of it like that, but I do think about that moment now that he said that to me. So yeah, great memories of the final, what happened afterwards. I mean, in Lisbon, not a lot really, apart from the great feeling in the dressing room. You're then onto the coach, and then we took the flight straight back to Madrid, so there was no partying. We got back to Madrid and we took the trophy.
Oh, trying to get to Cibeles, of course.
Yeah, we went from the Bernabeu to Cibeles, and incredible.
Well, some I think most people who listen to the beginning of you know what that means, but at least for as we wind up this interview, this gorgeous interview, explain what that is, what it's like, what it looks like, what Cibeles is in this capital of Spain that we're speaking in now. Tell them what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got onto the open top bus at the stadium, and then you go down the main. That's a massive main avenue down in Madrid called the Castellana. And that goes to a point where there's a statue, and then there's the Cibeles, and then there's the... I'm not sure what the... It's an iconic structure right in the middle of Madrid. And that's the place where, if you're with Real Madrid, that you go and celebrate the victory. And there's another place, Neptune. Where Atletico go.
Yeah. Just less regularly.
There were hundreds of thousands of people on the street, and it wasn't... We didn't get to Cibeles till 6 a.m. and the amount of people on the streets was incredible. That was a fantastic moment. Sergio and Iker took the trophy up onto the platform. There's a tradition of putting the scarf around
in Britain,
the statue, and
health and safety wouldn't allow it.
Because they're quite high up.
Yeah, they are. They put all the scaffolding up and it looked good.
All the same.
A few speeches back to the stadium, and then we went off again, and then we reported back the next day, and that's when we went to the town hall, we went to see the mayor, Puerto del Sol, huge crowds, and then finished off back at the stadium where we presented the trophy to the supporters. 85,000 there, firework display. Sensational. But then
it's gone. Finally.
Oh, what? It finishes. You know, you go off, the players go with their international, you're on holiday. You know, it's a memory. It's a fantastic memory.
It's a fleeting moment.
You know what? There's so much build-up to it. And I felt this a little bit with the other. I've been fortunate enough to be involved in 9 major trophies. And the journey is long and tough and demanding. The victory is euphoric, but it's short-lived. Because you have to move on quickly. Because there's another season, there's another game, there's other trophies to be won. But these kind of interviews that really sort of bring it back when you start to really think about it and talk about it. You know, I have my medal, which is obviously something very special that will get passed on through the family. The club, with all the 4 trophies we won, gave us a miniature trophy, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
And we had a lovely watch as well for winning the Champions League, so all nice things.
Touching on watches, he said, with restraint that he doesn't normally have and maturity which I don't normally show, it's about time to let you go, which pisses me off. Thank you for explaining it so well. Thank you for sharing it. We didn't know when we started out, but we have discovered that people get addicted to hearing these stories. And if, as a bonus, you've enjoyed it too, then we kind of feel our job's done, and both Martin and I are very happy indeed. It's been evident from the start that we've been speaking to a champion, and a British champion who did it abroad in a foreign language. That ain't nothing. Thanks for talking to us.
No, I appreciate it. Graham, thank you.
Well done, champ. Hello, is it me you're looking for? Carlo. Lionel Richie on the team bus on the way to a Champions League final. No! The Commodores? Fine. Lionel Richie love songs, no. No wonder they put on reggaeton or whatever tosh young Spanish footballers listen to these days. Thanks to Paul Clement there for a brilliant exposition of what it was like to be an Englishman at the heart of Europe's most successful club. Enjoyed meeting him, enjoyed listening to him, sharing steak and anecdotes with him. I would say to you that Carlo Ancelotti wants Paul at Bayern Munich. Whether he goes there or not will depend on his own appetite to stay as a manager in his own right, something which I believe he's eminently capable of succeeding at. But the lure of working with the mighty Carlo Ancelotti at Bayern Munich again? Well, there's a test for you. There's a choice. I really hope you've enjoyed Paul Clement, all our other guests. Just at the end of the season, we reached at least 2.5 million listens. You've been fantastic. It's been wonderful for Neil and Martin and I to discover that you feel the same way about football as us, that you like the same anecdotes as us, that you've got an open, broad mind about what we can talk about. It's been outstanding hearing from you about your enjoyment and just being part of this sort of huge football-loving family that we broadly call The Big Interview. It's produced by Backpage, that's Neil and Martin, edited brilliantly, often at great length, by Alex Adey. She takes out all the bloopers, some of the swearing, the coughing, the dogs, the lovebirds. Alex, good job. If you want to keep up to date with everything we're doing, go to grahamhunter.tv and sign up for the email slot. We'll keep you in touch. We'll send you a newsletter. We will listen to your suggestions about who to talk to. We will try to incorporate your questions. I promise we really will. We're at GH Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Summer's coming. Champions League final is upon us. How the hell are we going to last through the summer without European Championships, baby? Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.